And she got into music recently. And actually, Paul Rickard, who's the co-director of the film, he knew of Ceremony and of Sherry and sort of suggested that we get in touch with them.
How would you sort of describe or summarize the kind of general political agendas of the different performers? Like, what kind of struggle are they involved in?
Welcome to Radio Free Thinker, the radio show podcast that promotes skepticism and critical thinking, right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Ethan, your free-thinking historian.
My name is Rob, cognitive psychologist, and we have a special guest in the studio with us today.
That's right, Jesse Bridle. He is a contributor to Skeptic North, representative of CFI Vancouver. Jesse,
hi, it's
welcome.
Great to be here. Thanks.
So, we have a pretty good show for you today. Why don't we start off with some science stories?
So, if you'll excuse me, I'm a little out of breath. I ran here again. let's see what I got here. Miller McCune, it's a magazine that looks at research and sees how it applies to practical problems in today's world. Recently did a story on how the beliefs and expectations that a patient comes into a surgery with can strongly affect the outcome. So there is something to be said for this idea that a lot of alt med practitioners say of mind over matter. Not, of course, in the strong sense that they usually mean it, but the expectations that you come in with can have a large effect on how well you recover, specifically whether you feel you have any power over your own recovery. So, excuse me.
You're exhausted, aren't you?
I literally ran all the way here and up the stairs from the bus stop.
Wow, that's very athletic. So mind over matter then. So we're not quite saying here that if, you know, you wish yourself better, you'll get better.
Yeah, it was a... They split patients into two groups based on their answers to a questionnaire that they gave before they went into surgery that basically measured, among other things, their beliefs regarding their personal control. For example, statements like, the course of my heart condition depends on me, how long the time frame of their condition and recovery was going to be, their emotional response to the illness, and things like that. And they found that higher levels of physical functioning 3 months after surgery were associated with the pre-surgery belief that the heart disease would be of a short duration and would not be related to serious consequences. In contrast, patients who perceive their illness to have a chronic or cyclical time course and who perceive their illness to have severe consequences on their lives reported higher levels of disability, depressive symptoms, and lower levels of physical functioning. So basically they concluded with in the line of Miller-McCune's mandate of practical applications that before surgeries, sometimes patients should get a counselor to sort of convince them that they have more control over their treatment course.
But at the same time, you don't want to give them, you know, what we might characterize as false hope, right?
Well, it seems in the situation that hope turns out not to be false because the proposed mechanisms that when you're hopeful, when you feel that, okay, yeah, I can do this, as opposed to, oh, there's nothing I can do, you end up actually taking steps to help your course of treatment.
Excellent. Well, that's good.
And one other story that was somewhat more amusing. There's a blog I enjoy reading called Weird Things. It's put out by Andrew Main, who is a magician that also worked at the JREF for some time, at the James Randi Educational Foundation, for those who don't know. And he was commenting on a recent op-ed at the New York Times that basically said that if your goal in life as a vegetarian or vegan is to avoid eating things because you do not wish to cause living things pain or harm, then you need to avoid eating plants as well, because new research suggests that plants actually have physical markers and release chemicals when they feel things associated with pain in humans, such as injuries to their physical form and things like that.
So what should they eat?
Well,
water?
No. I like the conclusion that Andrew Main comes to. This is why we should eat as many cows as possible. A cow eats millions of blades of grass, each one a soulful, howling poet. And this genocide must be stopped, one juicy, delicious steak at a time.
I can get behind that.
That's interesting.
So that's it for the science stories I managed to pull up this week.
Well, always interesting. Well, like I said, we have a special guest with us here, and we'll be talking about some interesting stories, including skeptical activism here in Vancouver. Before we get to that, though, there was an interesting event that I'm sure most of our listeners heard about. It involved an attempted terrorist attack on attempt to blow up a plane while landing in Detroit. So what are the details of this case, Rob?
Yes, there was a Nigerian man who wanted to, you know, cause a terrorist act on a plane taking off from Detroit, and he basically hid explosives within his pants. So he has been dubbed by the media, the rather amused media, as opposed to the horrified mainstream media, as the pants bomber. Hmm. And there's been lots of jokes about, well, thank God the TSA hasn't made us start taking our pants off when we start going through security, like they did with the shoe bomber years ago. I think Richard Wright was his name. Maybe Reed. I don't know. But TSA has actually put in new regulations, which are supposed to combat copycats, basically.
The TSA is a security...
Yeah, I think it's the Transit Security Advisory something, or I don't know, association.
Yeah.
Someone should look this up. Wait, that was my job. But they put in new regulations that in the last hour of a flight, you are not allowed to get up for any reason, including having to go to the bathroom. So there were many reports this past weekend of people flying to and from home for holidays, reporting that cheerful stewardesses saying things like, plan accordingly. But also, you're not allowed to hold anything in your lap, like a blanket, a book, or a laptop that could supposedly conceal any explosives you're trying to activate on your pants.
I mean, that, like, table thing that folds down, that covers up your lap, too. I mean, like, what if you have to have an in-flight meal?
Presumably, you're not allowed to in the last hour of the flight.
Wow, that's depressing.
So, there's been a lot of flack to the TSA for their reactionary methods that they basically say are there to combat copycat people. Unfortunately, the TSA doesn't release any statistics over whether their methods have caught people that were going to do copycat attacks, or indeed any kind of attacks, because they cite national security regulations, and therefore we have no idea whether any of their methods are particularly effective. Although people have done studies on their methods, and of course there's always those exposés of, like, you know, some guy on 60 Minutes sneaking in a bunch of bullets and guns underneath his jacket through security very easily.
Right.
There was an article on Gizmodo, which sort of gives a pretty good review of what's been going on here, that also talks about how TSA regulations, not exactly based in reality, and we're spending a lot of money, or at least the U.S. government is.
Not us.
Not us. I'm not actually sure how many of these regulations apply in Canada. So
I know that some of them do, because I believe Air Canada posted an advisory on their webpage saying to Canadians, expect delays. I think that any time a plane like flies into a country, you enter that jurisdiction. So if you're the departing country, like, almost functions as an extension of that country as well. So if you're in Amsterdam and you're leaving, like where I believe this guy was attempting to bomb Detroit from, you're under American jurisdiction at that point.
Okay.
So, but it is kind of interesting. I was reading some of the rules and what they've released. It's actually designed to be unpredictable and different in each airport, I guess, so that, you know, terrorists don't read
the
news.
Figure out the pattern, and therefore, you know, can't guess how to circumvent it. But
I mean, I don't know. That's explained to me that I guess you can't blow something up sitting down. I don't get that part. But on regard to sort of the rules themselves, and are they effective? The one thing that I sort of would point out, though, is that just because we haven't actually seen terrorist attacks doesn't mean there haven't been attempts which have been foiled by other means, like law enforcement or, you know, like the FBI or CIA in America or Canada's equivalent.
Or even as Bruce Schneider, I believe, he's a security expert, said himself, by the passengers themselves.
Exactly,
passengers now know how to resist terrorists. They know that they can. They know that it is within their power to do so. He actually says very strongly, and has been for the past several years since the security regulations were put in since 9/11, that the only two security regulations that have done anything to help stop terrorist attacks and increase safety on airlines is reinforcing and keeping the cabin door closed, and the fact that passengers now know that they can resist terrorists.
Exactly. Yeah, and I mean, Jesse, we were talking earlier about the actual odds of a terrorist attack.
Yeah, I think that I probably saw the same thing that you found on Gizmodo. They had a neat graphic with some of the statistics. And I wish I could remember them. The odds of being struck by lightning are something like two orders of magnitude more likely than being a victim of a terrorist attack. The stat that I liked was you could expect to fly. If you put all of the miles flown in the world into one trip, you could expect to fly from the Earth to Neptune twice before you get one terrorist attack.
And yet, they spend something like, what was it, $128 million or billion dollars every year, or just upped it to that much spending this year? It was an absolutely ridiculous sum for something that has a massively tiny likelihood. And the point is, I mean, we don't know what the exact likelihood is, except based on statistics that people have managed to collect. But again, they don't release their data, so we have no idea.
Yeah.
This actually got lightning rods would be a much better
more useful.
Yeah.
This actually got me thinking about something else that the article talks about called Take Back Takeoff. It's a movement that sort of got started some years ago, quite a long time ago, actually. And it's in response to the regulations, or at least the supposed regulations, that say you're not allowed to use any electronic devices like phones or video games or music players, personal music players, during takeoff. And the reasoning behind this, they say, is because of the possible electromagnetic interference. Now, these regulations, I suspect, were put in place when people didn't really understand what effect EMI could have on aircraft navigation systems. But since then, navigation systems have been improved slightly. Now they're behind a shielded cabin door and shielded walls around the airplane, and EMI pretty much has absolutely no effect on them. So that's the sort of thing where every time, you know, you're trying to play your music player during takeoff, instead of sitting there staring out the window or at the back of some fat guy sitting in front of you, the stewardess comes by and says, "Sorry, you have to turn that off." You should ask why. And if they can't explain you, you know, and they can't because EMI has been shown to have no effect.
I remember I saw an episode of the Mythbusters about that, operating like a cell phone on a plane. And I think their end conclusion was something like myth light or probable, or what do they say when it's half and half or something?
Probable, maybe?
Plausible,
that's it. Yeah, myth plausible or something like that. So, yeah, I'm not eager. I'm not going to be first one to test that one.
Well, the thing is, there are explicit regulations saying that Wi-Fi, in-flight Wi-Fi, and your use of your laptop is allowed during takeoff in first class, for example. So if you're allowed to use Wi-Fi with your laptop, why aren't you allowed to put on the musical player?
It's a good question. We should email the airlines and ask them that.
I'm fairly certain they receive many, many complaints.
Yeah, probably. I would guess that.
No, amusingly, the Gizmodo article was entitled "President Obama, It's Time to Fire the TSA."
Yeah,
can he do that?
He's the president. But well, you know, it's interesting. I was just reading an article today about this, and basically, what Obama said is, you know, this is an unacceptable breach of security, blah blah blah. You know, at the same time as I agree with this is probably not going to accomplish anything. These new regulations. If he didn't do anything, he's going to get roasted. If he does anything, he's going to get roasted. It's a situation where
you
have to make some kind of gesture. And we were talking about this too, Jesse. You know, they raised the alert status from orange to orange.
Because orange to red, I believe.
Orange to
orange.
Was it to orange?
It's
from orange to orange?
Apparently.
Yeah, they can't, right. They can't lower it.
Different shade of orange.
You know, I mean, they can't lower it. They can't really raise it. So what are you supposed to do in this situation? I mean,
I think it was that they didn't change it, but no one knew what it was. So they just announced the security status is now orange. And people are like, oh, wow. But if they, you know, bothered to check, they'd see that it hadn't actually changed.
The colors seem so arbitrary anyway.
Yeah,
there's actually an amusing Zay Frank video where he plays the guy who designed the color scheme for the threat levels, and you should watch it. Google it; it's amazing.
Cool. Well, why don't we go to a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with more on Radio Free Thinker.
Misery that is college radio, where they apparently just let any bewildered freshman wander into the booth and try to run a radio station. Campus Outreach is looking for... Hang on. College radio can pretty much be summed up in five words.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Want to know what's going on around town? LiveMusicVancouver.com is the Lower Mainland's comprehensive source for live music listings. We've got more than 350 shows listed at any time, and our listings are updated continuously by hundreds of the very people who put on the shows you love. Artist information and MP3s are accessible right from the listings, as are maps and calendars for virtually every venue in the city. All this and tons more totally free at LiveMusicVancouver.com.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. So we mentioned earlier that we're going to be talking about skeptical activism with Jesse here. And I wanted to springboard into this issue here.
With your favorite topic on the show.
Yeah, my favorite topic.
I think you mentioned this in at least five different shows.
Well, that's why I'm going to be brief. Everybody knows that I just love the Georgia Strait, and I just love that correspondent, Sonia McLeod, on the Georgia Strait, and her awesome web pages that promotes anti-vax and skepticism as a right-wing hate group. But I kind of wanted to talk a bit about how skeptics respond to this sort of thing. And that's why I'm so glad we have Jesse here, who is a representative of CFI Vancouver, one of the sort of the leading forces of skepticism in this city.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you've actually corresponded with Sonia on her blog about this.
Yep.
So tell us about that interaction you had with her.
Well, you've talked about her before, so just really briefly, she had a couple of articles a few months ago in the Georgia Strait where a few of us, myself included, jumped into the comments and tried to explain pretty carefully, I think, politely, why she was perhaps mistaken, but they locked out the comments and they stopped the ratings on the comments. Upset me a little bit, so I went and found out a little bit more about her, found her blog, and I subscribe to her blog, and occasionally I'll post something on Facebook if she has a particularly egregious anti-vaccine article or something. So just a few weeks ago now, she posted an anti-vaccine post that really had nothing to do with homeopathy. It was about miscarriages. I think you've talked about this specifically as well. So yeah, a bunch of us went into the comments, and there was one or two at first who were a little bit reactionary, perhaps, and yelled at her. But she didn't allow those comments to go through. Perhaps it put her in the frame of mind to be wary of skeptics and to be angry with us. But a few of us, some using pseudonyms, some using our real names, tried to explain to her very carefully why you can't just cherry-pick this data and why you have to have controlled studies and why it's maybe irresponsible to be throwing around allegations like vaccines cause miscarriages in women because 7 women had a vaccine and then later on had a miscarriage. And when she realized that we were from a somewhat organized group, she put up some really paranoid comments herself about, like you say, right-wing hate groups and
misogynistic.
She called us sexist.
Yeah. So I guess the question I think a lot of our listeners, myself included, would have is, what do we do about this sort of thing? Because the Georgia Strait, I mean, you might say, okay, well, it's just a small independent newspaper, but it actually has a fairly large readership.
Yeah.
And not only that, it is sort of the publication of choice for a lot of young, you know, left-leaning
yuppies,
intellectuals, right? I mean, and that, let's be fair, that is a certain target audience for skepticism, despite what Sonia thinks. So it is kind of a concern when we see this sort of thing kind of being spewed around, and it occasionally get picked up by mainstream media. So, like, what do you recommend to our listeners? What should they turn to? Who should they turn to?
Donations to CFI can be made at cficanada.ca. No, I think the best way to go about it is just in your personal life. Don't hide your skepticism. Don't hide your beliefs from your friends. I think we all have some of those yuppie friends, some hipster friends, and when they talk about taking their bee pollen supplements, the usual reaction is just to shut up and let them sort of say whatever they want.
That probably happened a lot during the holidays when people were coming home.
It happened to me a few times, yeah.
My family had conversations about chiropractors and are you getting the vaccine, who's gotten the vaccine. And yeah, it can be a really strong social pressure to keep your mouth shut and to not criticize people. You don't have to be mean about it, but I think that you can express your own opinion and your own views. And let's face it, we have the most evidence for our views and I think we owe it to our friends and our relatives to be responsible with that. You know, come to them with the evidence. Don't just start yelling at them. But that's really the place to start.
Right. And, of course, for someone who wants to get involved, CFI is out there. CFI Vancouver is planning events. Secret events that we can't tell you about.
This is the first I'm even hearing you.
It's very secret.
We've got lots of stuff coming for the new year, but nothing's confirmed to the point where I want to be announcing it. But yeah, I mean, we could use all the help we can get. Definitely donations. If you're looking for a charity to donate to, then you can donate locally. And the more money we get, you know, that's the biggest limit to us right now is volunteers and money.
Right.
So that would be excellent.
It's true, too. If our listeners have perhaps heard of an article by Daniel Loxton, I believe. I think it was What Do I Do Next?
Yeah, it's called What Do I Do Next? And he published two versions of it. One, a sort of quick version of it that sort of runs down point by point. I think 150 things that you can do
something
to continue
like that. And he got a lot of skeptic people in the community to help plan it. And basically, one of the number one problems is that the skeptical movement is very underfunded. And, you know, CFI is completely volunteers, I assume.
Volunteer and based on private donations and memberships. And,
it's a registered nonprofit, I think.
It is, just recently in Canada. We've got nonprofit status, so you can get a tax receipt.
Excellent.
That's really, yeah. And there's a lot of other, I think, community forums available. We've talked a lot about Skeptics in the Pub, which is where we've all corresponded and met and
growing
interacted. Yeah,
And we'll see you there in January 17th, I think.
The 12th, actually.
12th for the pub quiz.
That's right.
In which the show will be fielding their very own team come and try and beat us out.
Probably won't be too difficult. Just pretend it is, you know, for our egos. And, of course, you know, there's Radio Free Thinker. There's I now know that there are two campus skeptical groups. There's the SFU Skeptics, mm-hmm. the UBC Free Thinkers. Yep. I'm not sure if there are any more, but they might be popping up. And there are other events like Café Scientifique, which happens every now and then.
Yeah, it's usually once a month.
Yeah.
And sort of slow over the winter.
So, I mean, there's lots of avenues for the skeptical activists to get involved and to feel like you're making a difference. When it comes to actual people like Sonia McLeod and the Georgia Strait, you know, what can you do about it? How can you stop feeling so helpless about it? I personally recommend emailing the Georgia Strait. Let them know that you're aware of what they're printing is BS, and let them know that you're not happy about it.
And their advertisers.
Exactly. You know, I've sent them emails before, and I usually get, you know, the standard sort of reply, thank you for your interest.
Boilerplate.
Yeah. But you know what? If they get a lot of these things, they're going to start to take notice. And, you know, if
they don't take notice, perhaps some other news agency will.
Yes, exactly.
If it gets really obvious that lots of people are complaining, they aren't doing anything about it, and it comes out that, you know, perhaps Sonia is advertising in it, there's a conflict of interest, and she's related to someone in charge of the paper, we go to another news agency, tell them about it, make a big story.
Exactly. Which has somewhat happened in the past. I mean, posts on Skeptic North have been picked up by the National Post, and blog posts by prominent skeptics like Jesse, myself, and other people like Kennedy Goodkey, for instance, have become popular hits. I mean, if you Google Sonia McLeod, our blogs come up like...
Yes, they do.
For a second page hit. So, I mean, we're definitely making an impact. And I think it's really important, you know. We got to send a message that this sort of proliferation of homeopathy and just bad pseudosciences, especially for Vancouver. I mean, you know, we're hosting the Olympics. We should try to look professional about this. We don't need a bunch of people going out there, you know, with signs saying don't get vaccinated.
Hosting the Olympics has problems besides
the world's going to be looking at us. We don't want to look
that's
like
for a future show.
Yeah. But the point is, you know, we want to make it clear that Vancouver is not this, you know, pile of pseudoscientific, uncritical thinking people. Despite what the Georgia Strait would have us, you know, believe. And I think it's really important that our listeners, you know, write into us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. You know, donate to CFI.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, you want to get involved in skepticism. One way you can do that is point out stories to us. We're not like web crawlers that, you know, spend in a machine-like trance hours browsing the internet to find every and...
Actually, I am.
The point is we're gonna miss something.
Yeah. So well, email Jesse. He can email us. And
send us in the stories that you see. Send us pictures of ads you found out in the street. Send us anything that could possibly have any bearing whatsoever on a skeptical viewpoint, or pseudoscience in Vancouver, or anything like that. We'll talk about it on the show.
Yeah, and we encourage our listeners. You know, if you hear us talk about something and you think, no, wow, that's ridiculous. I shouldn't be sitting around when, you know, this is going on and I want to get involved. Definitely email us because we can send you a list of things, not just the Daniel Loxton list. We can send you a whole list of people to talk to, organizations to donate your time, your money to, and help make these problems, you know, go away. We're never going to beat homeopathy. We're never going to kick it out of the city or anything. But you can at least make it more friendly to science-based medicine. And I think that's a laudable goal for all of us, right? So, we're almost out of time. So, do we have any skeptical events or things to promote? I know that Jesse might want to promote that organization you're part of again. What's it called again?
Center for Inquiry Canada.
That's right. You guys have a webpage or?
CFICanada.ca.
Excellent. And do we have anything to promote, Rob?
I got nothing.
Okay. Well,
I ran here, if you recall.
Actually, I can mention there's a skeptic camp coming up. That's just in the beginning stages of being planned, so there's nothing absolutely confirmed yet. But it's going to be in the second half of March, coinciding with the start of spring.
So what exactly is Skepticamp?
Skepticamp is an open format conference, sort of like a mini TAM, if people are familiar with the Amazing Meeting in Las Vegas, where all of the participants are encouraged to present something as well.
So sort of like an unconference.
Exactly. It's based on BarCamp.
All right.
And you can find, I believe it's skepticamp.org has all of the information. So if you'd like to present something, a 5-minute, 10-minute presentation on your favorite pseudoscience or science or news stories that have been going on, whatever you have special interest in, start thinking about that.
Excellent. That's a really good idea, and I think I'll look into that myself. Of course, I would like to remind all our listeners that Skeptics in the Pub is on January 12th. It is the pub quiz night, so please mark that on your calendars. Also, if you happen to like reading blog posts, check out Skeptic North. Myself and Jesse are contributors, and it's doing fantastic, so thanks for stopping by and checking that out. Also, I want to remind you that if you don't already, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, leave a favorable review, or if you really hate the show, you can just rant about that. And if you want, please email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from our listeners, so please give us a shout. And we're out of time. So thank you, everyone, for listening. This is Ethan, you're a free-thinking historian, saying goodnight.
This is Rob, cognitive psychologist, saying I hope everyone had a good holiday.
And this is Jesse Bridle from CFI, saying thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
So long, everybody.
Good night.
Big government and big pharma have entered into a secret conspiracy, in which secret government contracts are sold to Big Pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so Big Pharma can sell us alien contraceptive pills. Or, if you'd rather get some rational news, check out Radio Free Thinker, the radio show / podcast that promotes skepticism, critical thinking, and science education. Every Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.